This is an ABC podcast.
This is ABC Australia Wide on ABC Radio.
Cheers from people in Gloucester today as the news a controversial coal mine in the Hunter Valley will not go ahead because of the impact on climate change. But not everyone is happy with the news. And mass stock losses in the floods in northwest Queensland.
If I were a cow, I'd have chucked the towel in 2 days ago. I wouldn't have been able to have coped any longer than that, I reckon.
I'm Sinead Mangan and this is Australia Wide. The Chief Justice of the Land and Environment Court of New South Wales has refused to allow a new coal mine in the Hunter Valley to go ahead because the development would increase greenhouse gas emissions. The ruling upholds a previous decision by the Independent Planning Commission to reject the Rocky Hill mine. More than 80% of locals in the nearby town of Gloucester oppose the mine, and Karen O'Brien's farm overlooks that site. She says it's a victory 10 years in the making.
It means that what we've fought for 10 years has actually now been worth the fight and the effort. It means that I can now look forward, and especially the climate change decision. It just means that we can move forward. We feel relief that everything that we have said has been correct. Our family can now move forward with our business. Our community can move forward to heal itself. Our community can move forward to actually get jobs that all of the community agree with.
But others say the mine would have brought much needed jobs to the region. John Hannaford is a business owner in Gloucester.
It was actually almost to the state of gut-wrenching. The future of the town and a lot of businesses in town and what related on it, and the fact that we were dealing with a completely reputable company who was so open and wanted to be part of our community and add to our community, I think it's a tremendous loss to our district to not have that opportunity especially our young folk, the people who are now leaving Gloucester in droves.
John Hannaford. But environmentalists say the decision to stop the Rocky Hill mine is a watershed moment. It's the first time a court in Australia has highlighted the climate impacts of coal mining. In his judgment, Brian Preston said the mine would have had detrimental impacts on climate change and on the social fabric of the town. David Morris is the Chief Executive Officer of the Environmental Defenders Office of New South Wales, who argued on behalf of the local community, and he joins me now. Now, Mr. Morris, can you explain the significance of this decision, firstly for the community?
Yeah, look, I mean, the significance for the community, first and foremost, is that they're not going to have an open-cut coal mine on their doorstep, which is something that I think you highlighted in the package the majority of that community didn't support. So they were elated today. We were obviously very proud and privileged to represent that community who have been fighting fossil fuel developments in the region for over 10 years.
In his conclusions, Chief Judge of the Court Brian Preston said, and I'm quoting him here, he said, the construction and operation of the mine and the transportation and combustion of the coal from the mine will result in the emission of greenhouse gases, which will contribute to climate change. Why is this wording in this judgment particularly significant?
This is the first time in an Australian court, and as far as I'm aware, internationally, that a judge has positively stated that a ground for refusing a particular project is its contribution to global climate change. It addresses the problem which has plagued project approvals for so long, which is that they don't contribute a massive amount in any single example to global climate change. This is necessarily a cumulative impact problem. So this particular mine is, I think, in the judgment, it says it will only contribute about a third of the average coal mine in New South Wales to global emissions. It's still a significant contributor, but the point is this is a cumulative problem that needs to be addressed at each individual project stage. And if we fail to do that, we will fail to address the problem generally.
So you're saying because the Rocky Hill coal mine was small in the grand scheme of things, that's why this judgment could be made in this particular circumstance?
On the contrary, I think this judgment presents even larger problems for coal mines or other fossil fuel projects, liquid natural gas projects, onshore gas projects like those proposed for the Kimberley and the Northern Territory that have a greater contribution to emissions. I think what the judge says in this instance is that given the point in time in history which these new applications are being made, they have to answer very, very difficult questions about why their project should go ahead in the context of global climate change. At the point in time in history where we already have enough approvals on the books that is going to see us overshoot the global carbon budget.
Do you think fossil fuel companies will be pricking their ears up on this judgment?
Look, I think that your more diversified, larger companies, AGL, BHP, these are companies that have recognised where we are in the time in history. They're already diversifying. They're already thinking about these things carefully. I think the bigger worry is for your pure play coal companies, your pure play coal seam gas and gas companies, who are going to be looking at this and wondering how are we going to address the wrong time test which the judge articulated in this judgment. How do they say why should their project go ahead in the face of a need to stay within our commitments in Paris, that the idea that we would keep global mean temperature rise to 1.5 degrees or under 2 degrees at the very least.
Why, Mr. Morris, did you describe this judgment as bedtime reading for politicians?
Well, I think that one of the things that really comes through when you read the judgment is that it's not the court's role, and the judge says this, to create policy about the least cost and most effective way to address the global abatement problem. How do we reduce emissions? How do we stay within 1.5 degrees? That's not the role of the court. That's the role of leadership. It's the role of policy. And we have had an almost complete absence of that in Australia for a very long time. And I just believe it would serve our country well for our leaders to be reading this judgment, because it sets out very, very thoroughly the issue of climate change, how courts around the world are addressing it, and really talks about what we must do to address it.
David Morris, the Chief Executive Officer of the Environmental Defenders Office of New South Wales, thank you.
My pleasure. Thank you.
You're listening to ABC Australia Wide.
In a statement to the ABC, Gloucester Resources Limited said it was disappointed by the decision, and the company will assess the implications and consider its next steps. Making news headlines today, while Townsville starts to clean up after record rains and floods, mould has become a problem. The Director General of Queensland's Department of Education, Tony Cook, says mould is thriving in the 30 schools that are closed from the flooding. Farmers in flood-torn Queensland have been given access to more government financial assistance. Minister for Agriculture David Littleproud said farmers will have access to recovery grants worth up to $75,000. West Australia's farmers have closed the history books on an almost $7 billion crop. That's their most valuable and second largest harvest ever. And in WA, the government has backed down on taking a stake in the rock lobster industry.
This is ABC Australia Wide.
And you're with me, Sinead Mangan. And as the court rules against a new coal mine in New South Wales, a new report has found Australia is leading the world in renewable energy. Professor Andrew Blakers, Australian National University, from Australian National University, explains why.
It's a combination of accident and design. Two very important programs allowed our industry to get off the ground and get critical mass. Those were the support program for rooftop solar and our renewable energy target. Having now reached critical mass, it means that we have very low installation costs by world standards. And of course, that's coupled with excellent wind and sun resources. And it's also coupled with the accident that we happen to have relatively high electricity prices.
What role do high electricity prices play in this?
The reason why high electricity prices are important is that it means that solar and wind could build scale while the prices are fairly high. in the short to medium term, solar and wind are going to come to dominate the electricity grid in Australia and prices will come down. But then the prices of wind and solar themselves are also coming down. And so it's likely that wind and solar can keep ahead of the game and maintain their advantage over coal or gas as an alternative.
There is talk, of course, about how renewable energy may not be the future, that coal-fired power stations or high-efficiency, low-emissions coal-fired power stations could be the answer. Do you think that this research kind of puts to bed the fact that perhaps we should be focusing more on renewable energies than coal-fire?
Such reports are simply moonshine. The facts of the matter are that at a global level, in 2017, which is the most recent data, wind and solar together were 60% of total new generation capacity, net new generation capacity installed, and coal was down around 10% and is heading out the back. So coal simply can't compete for new build power stations now with wind and solar. And the same applies to nuclear and gas. In Australia, 100% of new generation capacity is wind and solar simply because it's cheaper. The only way that a new coal power station could be built in Australia would be with massive government subsidies.
What's next? What can we expect in the future for renewable energy?
Well, the very important impact of the renewable revolution in Australia is that we're going to meet our Paris emissions reductions targets years early and can go very far beyond them at zero net cost. I expect that from this year onwards, our greenhouse emissions will start to fall simply because solar and wind are displacing coal burning in the electricity system. But it doesn't stop there. In the future, solar and wind will push gas out of the heating business and will push oil out of transport through the electric vehicle business, and in the longer term, over the next 20 years, can push oil, gas and coal out of the entire Australian economy, and all at zero or negative cost, because solar and wind are now so cheap compared with fossil fuel burning. Governments can speed up or slow down this transition, but they can't stop it. And it's very much to be hoped that the state and federal governments in Australia will read the writing on the wall and decide that we're going to go renewable, so let's do it quickly and efficiently and at lowest cost.
Professor Andrew Blakers from the Australian National University School of Electrical Energy and Materials, and he was speaking to Gary John Lasaut in Port Pirie. But the ANU research is at odds with previous reports, including the 2018 Emissions Gap Report from the United Nations, which said Australia will not meet its 2030 target. Gary John Lasaut also spoke to Dr. Sven Teske from the Institute for Sustainable Futures at the University of Technology, Sydney, and he says policy measures need to be implemented, including better regulation of how to connect new utility-scale solar and wind farm to the grid.
One of the questions was, Dane, do you remember when Grandad tipped the back hour over out at the ball?
ABC Australia Wide.
And it was like, I thought, okey-doke, that thing works.
On ABC Radio.
After years of drought followed by unprecedented rain, cattle are lying dead across northwest Queensland. Kemi Maguire has been speaking to graziers on the ground and she joins me now from Mount Isa. Kemi, where are these affected properties?
Well, they spanned across Hughenden towards the east coast to Cloncurry, about an hour's drive away out of Mount Isa, and now today south to Winton in western Queensland. Now, the sun is out today, but we're currently seeing flood levels across the Flinders River reach record-breaking heights still. So, as your listeners may have seen on social media, this is surrounding towns of what looks like an ocean.
Do you have any ideas of the numbers of cattle affected?
Well, we're looking into the thousands. We drove yesterday across Cloncurry alone on just one road for just a few kilometres and would have seen dead cattle lying in paddocks into the hundreds. So that was just one sample size there. Some major beef producers in the northwest have already recorded 90 to 100% livestock loss, State government has made an early estimate of about 40% of the industry has been affected here. And however, we're not seeing no solid numbers yet. People haven't been able to get out and count yet due to the severe weather. So, and most areas are still in flood. So we're waiting to get a clearer picture in the coming weeks.
It must be very distressing for graziers.
There's a lot of emotion coming out. We were speaking to a few yesterday and they had to just leave immediately because people needed help shooting their cattle and dogs and horses. And you could just see it in their face of just, it was, here we go again, essentially.
And as a reporter, it's quite an ominous sight just seeing that amount of death.
It is, and especially since we're going out on the stations and it was all about a week ago, it was about drought and how they were hoping for rain. And in the first couple of days of broadcasting that first rain, it was quite exciting and we were getting a lot of cheery people. I think the headline that we were using was good beer drinking weather as people were putting hay on dinghies and sending them out to paddocks. And then the flood levels just kept rising. And I think it just became so harrowing after that.
You've spoken to a number of graziers. What are they telling you?
Well, I'll let them speak for themselves. Rachel Anderson from Eddington Station is just about 20 kilometres west of Julia Creek, and here's what she had to say.
If I were a cow, I'd have chucked the towel in 2 days ago. I wouldn't have been able to have coped any longer than that, I reckon. They'll just be going down the creek. Some are probably hung up in trees. Some are probably hung up in fence lines. They'll just continue to go downstream. I wanted my husband to put the boat in to go and rescue, you know, 6 or 8 head that were swimming the creek to try and find their calves or swim to safety. But, you know, as he said to me, he said, well, you know, we could easily get tangled in fence lines that have gone down, big sticks, you know, the motor goes, and then where are we going to go? Probably one message I'd like to get out is that there is such thing as too much rain.
That's Rachel Anderson, who's at Eddington Station, which is 20 k's outside of Julia Creek. Now, for the cattle that are left, have they got access to feed?
Yes, they do. So state and federal government have initiated Category C. So that's recovery and also Category B response. So that's funding to supply helicopters and food suppliers there. And helicopters are now out because the severe weather has dropped enough for choppers to be out there. So we are seeing feed coming in today and into the weekend and coming weeks. However, there is a flip side to that. As I mentioned before, a few stations have recorded about 100% livestock loss, and fuel is becoming a bit of a rarity now as the roads are still cut off. So to supply those helicopters, and a lot of call-outs are being made that if you don't need the feed, cancel your order to save on fuel. So it really is that's a hard decision there as well in terms of feed.
Kemi Maguire in Mount Isa, thanks for filling us in on what's happening there here on Australia Wide.
No worries. Thanks for having me, Sinead.
Break through the holiday haze with new podcasts on the ABC Listen app.
Spend some time exploring world history with Little Tiny.
Stories about the small things that have changed the world.
All in the space of a coffee break.
Or grab the kids and join AFL legend Brett Kirk for a new season of Mindfully, where he looks at mindfulness at school.
It's being aware and kind and being present.
Breathe.
Listen.
Learn. Now on the ABC Listen app.
And while you're there, why not subscribe to Australia Wide's podcast, available wherever you are. It's a small sport, but one that's seen a 700% increase in the number of female competitors over the next 5 years, over the last 5 years, I mean. It's called the Arnold Strong Woman Championships, and they're being held in Melbourne next month. The sport is based on weightlifting and requires an intense amount of physical and mental endurance. Dominic Cansdale caught up with a first-time competitor in the regional town of Ballarat in Victoria.
Out the back of her gym in Ballarat's north, Victoria Stewart is working out. But what makes her exercise regime different is that it involves flipping a car. Victoria is one of 57 women who have qualified for the Arnold Strongman and Strongwoman Championship next month in Melbourne, a competition named after its patron, Arnold Schwarzenegger.
you don't have to fit a certain shape or person or, you know, anyone can do it.
She spent the past 2 years training for the competition, which involves five grueling events such as lifting a 90-kilogram concrete weight the size of a beach ball and carrying a 240-kilogram frame across the room. But for Victoria, building muscle is just one part of a bigger benefit.
Well, it makes you believe in yourself. So I've always been a doubter, always been, you know, I suppose it's anyone, always in the back of my mind think that I can't do things. But, you know, then when you step up to that weight, we either can or you can't. So when you can, it really makes you think, wow, you know, I can do that after all.
A kindergarten teacher by day, Victoria is just one of a growing number of women taking up a sport usually reserved for big, buff men.
Growing up, you know, in high school and that, I was never really fit. I was never really good at, you know, running or anything, probably because of my size mostly. I wasn't a great netballer, but always gave it a try. And it was actually great to think that I finally found something that I could be good at, you know.
The women's championships are broken into three categories based on weight, from the under 65 kg division up into the opens.
And it all started off with, you know, the want for people to lift heavy and odd objects.
That's Aaron Scarborough, head organiser of the Arnold Strongman and Strongwomen Championships.
In 2015, we had a grand total of 33 or 35 competitors, but we had seven women, whereas now we've got seven weight divisions and we will have between 110 and 130 competitors.
The competition has a 30-year history internationally, but has only operated in Australia since 2015. But Mr. Scarborough says they've opened up new weight categories and events to make the competition more accessible to the part-time strong men and women.
So you don't have to be a 7-foot giant from Iceland, grew up on a farm somewhere throwing rocks. You can be, you know, 80-kilo male, 100-kilo male, females of different weight divisions and shapes and sizes, and it's quite an accessible sport for people with, I guess, varied ability levels.
As the doors continue to open, Mr. Scarborough has high hopes for the sport in Australia.
Sort of new age of empowerment for females and the sort of, you know, I guess a changing of an era where, you know, everyone can do this. You feel amazing from it. You feel strong. Who doesn't want to feel strong?
And while Victoria faces some stiff competition next month, she feels more empowered than nervous.
The best thing about strong women is everyone's so supportive. So you have people that you haven't even met before and they're standing, you know, a few metres away screaming at you, telling you that you can do it. So luckily those voices and knowing how proud you're going to be of yourself after you get it up, yeah, so it's just the best feeling.
Strong woman competitor Victoria Stewart ending that report from Dominic Cansdale. The urge to lift big and unusual things.
Oh,
have you ever had that urge, Bridget? Sorry, Bridget Starr joins me in the studio.
No, not unless it's some kind of an emergency situation that I think I'd have to prepare for.
I think it's extraordinary.
I'm pretty proud that I can do a couple of push-ups.
I know.
So I guess I can lift myself a little bit.
Well, and you're a tall person.
Exactly.
Yes.
I'm not tiny.
Fair play to you, Bridget.
But I'm no car, so.
No, you're not flipping cars on the weekend, that's for sure.
That's particularly impressive. I love Victoria's attitude. She's great.
Oh, fantastic.
And they're great photos of online as well. You can see the mid-car flip up on the ABC News website. If it takes your fancy. Sinead, I lost my voice for a second. You mentioned earlier that mould has been an issue, of course, as we would expect, through the flooded areas in Townsville. Just a bit more on that, because as you said, it's a particular problem for schools. So around 30 are closed at the moment. And in fact, it is, according to the Queensland Department of Education, the biggest problem they have at the moment.
It's a big health issue.
Yes, a significant health issue as well. So obviously you don't want to send kids into that environment. They're going to work through those schools one at a time and try and open them progressively over the next week or so. There is a note from the public health unit in Townsville to say that for most healthy people, it shouldn't be that much of an issue. You've just got to try and get in there and clean it. They're recommending with diluted vinegar.
Is that the best way of getting
a mask,
rid of it?
Yeah, getting rid of it with vinegar, which is at least a good, you know, reasonably cheap solution. But people who might be susceptible are those who have lung diseases, including asthma, people who've had chemotherapy or having it, diabetes, kidney disease. If you're generally unwell, then take extra care.
Thanks very much, Bridget Fitzgerald. And thanks very much for your company this week on Australia Wide. Don't forget, you can always subscribe to our podcast on the Listen app. I hope you have a lovely evening. Cheerio.
You've been listening to an ABC podcast. Discover more great ABC podcasts, live radio, and exclusives on the ABC Listen app.